and welcome to Planatials Podcast. My name is Barbara Ginty, and I'm your host, and I'm also a CFP, so a Certified Financial Planner, and the creator of the online Planatial classes, which can be found at www.planatial.com. And I'm here today with my guest, Natasha.
You got to accent on Natasha. Natasha.
Okay, great.
Thank you for explaining. You're welcome.
As you might have realized on our podcast, we disguise names to protect our guests since we are divulging very, very personal information.
Very personal.
All of their financial information. So my guest today has decided on the name
Natasha.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for clearing that up for me.
No props.
So, give us a little bit of your background. Now, I believe you just started working in a new job. Is that true?
Yes, I had a career change, late 20s, early 30s, went back to law school. Previous to that, I was working in the entertainment industry. Shout out to those in the entertainment industry. If you're familiar with the industry, you know it doesn't pay well. So for most of my 20s, I didn't have a lot of free cash.
What were you making when you worked in the entertainment industry?
So I started out making, as an assistant, $35,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah, oh yeah. Not pretty. Not pretty.
And $35,000 a year, where were you living?
New York City.
Okay.
So unlivable, pretty much. So then I eventually, after 6 years, I left making $50,000 a year.
Okay, so that was a pretty good. So how long did it take you to get that $15,000 jump?
It took about 6 years.
Okay, so it was incremental on taking it?
It was a lot of like pulling teeth and finally getting a livable, not totally livable salary, but something that was better.
Okay.
So yeah, I made $50,000 when I left. It's still, when I left, I was at that time living in L.A., so between New York and L.A., it wasn't a lot of money in terms of being able to save. So when I left, I had literally no savings. I was living paycheck to paycheck.
So you lived paycheck to paycheck. Were you in your work plan?
Yes. I had a 401k. I was matching. I think that's what you call it. I was matching.
You were matching? I think they were matching.
They were matching.
I'm not sure who you were matching.
They were matching. I think it was after 3 years, they would match. And I think it was like at 4 or 5%.
Okay.
So I had a good amount. When I left the company after 6 years, I think I had about $60,000 in my 401k.
And what got you in the 401k on such a small salary?
My financial advisor, my certified financial planner, advised me strongly to do it because I had no other money coming in.
Were you given a choice in that?
No, it was not a choice. The decision was made for Natasha. So
you were in the 401k the entire time you worked?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
The entire time.
Because your financial advisor
strongly recommended it. Violently recommended it. No choice.
Was it worth it?
It was, because, yeah, I had $60,000 when I left.
And how much did you have in savings when you left?
Oh, I had no savings. I had no savings. Like I said, I lived paycheck to paycheck.
And then what happened if you didn't make it paycheck to paycheck?
I would usually hit up the rents, hit up the parents.
The parents?
Ask them for maybe a hundo, a Benjamin Franklin here and there so I could eat or pay my electric. Interestingly, I thought that, you know, like, your internet would be shut off after 1 month of not paying, and that's not the case. So, listeners, if you're monthly on your internet, don't worry. They're not going to shut it off. You could go, like, 2 months before it starts to get a little dodgy. But, yeah, living paycheck to paycheck. So when I left my company at a 401k, I talked to my financial advisor, and then we rolled it into an IRA.
Okay.
Right? Rolled into an IRA. So that was the only money.
You can disclose who your financial advisor is.
It's you! but that's really the only actual money, like, pot of money I have to my name was that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why did you decide to you were in music?
I was in the music industry. It is an industry that is a lot of fun, long hours, terrible pay. The industry itself is just hemorrhaging money. They're really late to the game on changes in the industry. So, for example, when I started as an intern in 2007, they were still like, no, MP3s aren't going to catch on. And then when I was there, it was the same thing with streaming. They came really late to the table. So by the time they finally do...
Is that because you worked for a major record label?
Major record label, yeah. So they just, for some reason, the people that run it, no disrespect, they just, you know, it just, the industry wasn't doing well. It's still not doing great. And there was always layoffs, always downsizing, never any cost of living raises, and never any raises. No raises to be seen, unless like you were an executive, then you got like crazy raises, but nothing for anybody else. But I'm not bitter about it.
Not angry at all.
I'm totally fine with it. But it was a place that I just didn't see myself really growing. And I'd always thought about being a lawyer. I don't come from a family of lawyers, so it always kind of seemed like something other people did.
Right. A little far-fetched.
And then after working in the industry for a while and gaining more responsibility, I was just like, oh, I can do this. Like, I can handle these crazy musicians. I'm sure I can handle law school. So it kind of helped to give me the confidence to pull the trigger and do that. But
well, so part of the reason you left was the income?
Part was income. It was like a amalgamation of things. But part of it was income. Part of it was job stability. Another part of it was I liked the idea of having a skill set that was mine, that wasn't dictated by the company that I worked for. So if I ever wanted to go out on my own, that was my decision and I could do it. It felt like at Capitol Records, it was like your job, how far you could go, you had no say in it. I didn't like that.
Oh yeah, because it's a corporate environment. And so a lot of it not only comes down to talent, but also the politics of the company, right?
Yes,
so
yeah.
You might be really good at your job, but politically maybe you're not aligned, so you might not get to the next level.
Yeah, and like because industry kept downsizing, there's fewer roles. So there's fewer places advance.
Yeah, more competition for those roles.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you went to law school.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 years.
3 years of hell, yeah.
3 years of hell. You were
3 years of hell.
Okay. And so how did you pay for law school?
I would call it the trifecta.
Oh.
I had part scholarship, part loans, and then partly based on my scholarship, I have an aunt who helped match my scholarship if I kept a certain GPA.
Oh, okay. So that's great.
Yeah.
So what do you end up walking away with law school? How much do you owe? Because it's 3 years not working, right?
Yeah. 3 years not working.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were old to go back. Weren't you, like, technically not... I'm not calling you old.
Not old. Mature.
She's mature.
But, yeah, I was 6 years out of college when I went back.
Yeah, because you said you worked for the record label for a while.
Yeah. So I was definitely older than some of the students there.
Than your classmates.
Yeah.
So it was a conscious decision to say, I'm making money, I'm putting money in my 401k, I may be living paycheck to paycheck, but I'm going to stop working and kind of pivot, if you will, and go a totally different direction.
Yeah, I mean, I have no savings. Let's add some debt to it.
Yeah, okay. We'll sprinkle that debt right on
exactly,
top. Okay.
Exactly.
So 3 years of law school, and you had a scholarship, you had...
Loans that took out.
And then you had a very benevolent, friendly aunt
yes.
who helped as well.
Yes. And she's single, so any septuagenarian men out there listening,
what
rich old aunt.
What was that word?
Septuagenarian.
Is that like a fancy law school word?
It means like in your 70s.
Oh.
I am likely mispronouncing it.
So if I ever see that on Tinder, I should swipe left.
Yes. Do not like that.
Do not like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That's a swipe left. So were all the listeners, say that word again?
Septuagenarian.
Swipe left if you're on a dating app.
That means they're
in
their
70s. So hopefully you're not listening
mm-hmm.
if you're in your 70s.
Yeah.
Not that we have anything against people in their 70s. But
you can always turn that debt around and get financial security at any age. So don't worry about
it's
it.
Never too late.
No judgment.
Never too late. Okay, so conscious decision, student loans, and what do you did? How much did you take out in loans, like roughly?
I think I took out about 60.
Okay, so that's not bad for 3 years of law school.
No, it's not.
So the scholarship helped probably a lot.
The scholarship did help. Yeah,
good to be smart.
It is good to be smart.
Did you initially get the scholarship, or did you have to ask for it?
No. So what happened was because I didn't know a lot about the law school process, I didn't realize that people studied for the LSAT. So the LSAT is...
Oh, you thought that was just like, you show up, take
it. Exactly, whatever.
Just to check that box.
Don't worry about it. So for listeners that don't know, LSAT is basically like the SAT for law school, but it's super, super important where it's pretty much the basis of the school you get into and if you get loans. So some kids will study for like a year and then take it. where I studied like a month. Don't recommend it. But I think because I was older, I was really anxious to start. I was just so nervous that if I waited a year and then did it, I just wouldn't do it. Do it mean going to law school. So I got into the school based, I think, on my professional record.
Oh, not so much on the
LSAT. But what I said to the school was, is, you know, I don't think the LSAT was, and I spoke to the dean, and basically after the first semester, I saw that I did really well, and I went to the dean and I said, you know, the LSAT clearly wasn't a reflection on my academic ability. I clearly am doing well. I'm in like the top, you know, 15% of my class based on this GPA in my first semester. I want a scholarship. And if I don't get a scholarship, I'm transferring. I didn't know if I was going to, but like, it's good to threaten that just because a lot of law schools have under enrollment. So they want as many students as possible. Mm-hmm. So basically she told
me, I would imagine like anything else, it's sticker price, right?
So exactly.
They're going to get, well, kind of like when you're flying, like not everyone on the airplane paid the same price. So there's people that pay top dollar and then there's people that are paying nothing.
Yeah. Yep. So what the dean told me was that they will evaluate that based on one, the first year, mm-hmm. and not just the semester. So I said, okay, because it was still, if hypothetically I wanted to transfer, that was still an option. So after the first year, my grades remained really well, and then I got the scholarship. So first year of school, I didn't have it.
Now, do you think you would have gotten had you not asked?
I don't think so. Why would they give money away?
Right.
You know, why would they give money away?
So it was good that you went and asked for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they always have some money stored away.
Well, just like I said, it's like it's sticker price, right? So I'm sure there were not many people that went in and said, hey, I'm leaving if you don't give me a scholarship.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is what somebody, I don't remember who told me this, but I think it's a good point, is that after the first year, there's probably students that had scholarships going in, oh, maybe it was you, that lost them after the first year because their grades were so bad. So there's that money that's still there. So I just kind of reached my hand in and I took it.
That's good.
Yeah.
Less money you have to pay back.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, cool. So in all 3 years of law school, so you're making no money, but you took out the loans to mm-hmm. afford it. So did you do, did anything happen with your monies from work?
My 401k?
Yes.
So my financial planner had me roll it into an IRA so that it was still growing and not just sitting in like a dormant 401k that wasn't being matched anymore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know what happened after that?
It made a lot of money.
Yeah. So while you were in law school, we moved your 401k, correct, to an IRA. Yeah. It wasn't dormant, but you weren't getting matched.
Yeah.
And we converted it to a Roth IRA. Did you know that?
No. Sure.
Okay, so this podcast is a little special because I actually know our guest, Natasha. Did I say it right?
Yeah, fine.
You can tell me how to say it.
Natasha.
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 Okay, I'm just going to let you repeat your name for yourself. So we took, she had $60,000 saved at the end of her career at the record label.
Yeah.
Which I won't give them the shout out that you gave them. And so you had $60,000. So we moved $20,000 from IRA to Roth each year that you were in law school. So we had 3 calendar years where you made how much?
Nothing.
Yes. We just took out some debt those years.
Not a thing.
No money coming in, which is fine. It was a great opportunity for you to go to law school. You got a scholarship. Mm. We're going to talk about your new job coming up in a minute here.
Woo!
Yep. Happy camper over here. Mm-hmm. But so for that 3 years, we did what's called a Roth conversion. It's a strategy where you take money from an IRA and you move it over to a Roth. At that time, it's taxable, but because my lovely guest, who I can't say her name, had no income, she paid no taxes. So she not only didn't pay when she went into the plan, because as you know, putting money into a 401k, it's tax deferred, so you're going to pay the taxes later. Well, she already paid the taxes and paid nothing because she had no income because she was in law school. So a lot of people, when they go to back to school, like I just talked to another friend who's going back to school, going to grad school, has money from a 401k, has been working for years, and now going to go back and get an MBA. The perfect time to move some of those monies from IRA to Roth. Obviously, you always want to consult a financial advisor and a tax person, a CPA or an accountant, because there's different effects for all these different moves and every situation is different. So for this specific case, it worked for you. So we were able to move the full $60,000 over your law school. So it went from a fully taxable account when you retired to a non-taxable account. So all the money went from IRA, which is the same type of dollar as a 401k, into a Roth, and you paid how much?
Nothing.
Yeah. I think maybe you got a little help from family on that one, and maybe someone paid your tax bill.
Maybe.
It's possible?
Yes, possible.
The rents, maybe? But yeah, and so then that $60,000 that we then moved over from an IRA into a Roth IRA over the 3 years, which is called the Roth conversion. And so now when you are retired, because it's a retirement account, you won't owe any taxes. So if we were to extrapolate that out and say that it was growing at 7.2% interest, that means your money doubles roughly every 10 years. It should be worth somewhere around $900,000 in your 70s. What was that? What was the name for the 7-year-old?
Septuagenarian.
So when you're a septuagenarian, you should have somewhere, if the market, you know, participates and does what we think it might do and averages somewhere between 7-8%, you should have about $900,000 that'll be tax-free.
That's great.
Well, let's hope the tax laws stay the same.
Yeah.
But either way.
If they do,
you're going to be in a good situation.
Drinks on me, everybody. Drinks on Tosh over here.
Okay, so now we got that all taken care of. Career change, went to law school, took out some student loans for that. Moved your 401k and did Roth conversion, so all of your money that you had saved in that time frame you were working, the $60,000 is now in a Roth rather than an IRA. And now what are you doing?
Working.
Yay!
Getting a paycheck.
And what's your new role now? What are you doing now?
So right now I started a job about 2.5 weeks ago. I am an assistant district attorney.
Whoa. That feels fancy.
Yep, just seeking justice.
How are you liking it so far?
I like it. It's definitely different.
How does it compare to working in the music industry?
You know, it's actually not that dissimilar because you're dealing with a lot.
What about the dress code?
Oh, I mean the dress code, yeah, stuff like that. Like I have to wear a suit, but you're dealing with people that may be difficult. There's just a lot of personalities involved.
Oh, is that you dealt with a lot of personalities on the record label?
Yeah, so I think dealing with people that are...
I was kind of thinking about the fun factor. I feel like you're in court now with this type of role, or...
You know, it's more serious. You're in court and stuff, but the personalities, people are really funny because I think you're dealing with some heavy stuff sometimes, and I think to kind of keep it light keeps you sane.
And so you're good at keeping it light?
Yeah, I try to, but it's good. It's very interesting. Yeah, it's different every day, so that's good. It's not boring. Not boring at all.
And how did you decide on this? Because I imagine you were, like, looking, what was your, when you were looking for a new job, because you went back and spent 3 years to go to law school. You took, apparently you didn't spend much time on the LSATs, but you took the LSATs, you fought for a scholarship. You then had to sit for the bar, obviously. You passed the bar.
Oh boy. Skip over that. That was rough.
Bad memories. So you put a lot of time and thought and effort into doing a career transition. You didn't just quit your job and look for a different path, a different role. You spent a lot of time and energy on this. So what were you looking for when you decided to take a job? I imagine that you had some criteria that you were looking for, especially after you said you lived paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, I wanted to enjoy what I did. That's always really important. As much as I complained earlier about the music industry, I did like going to work every day.
Okay.
So I wanted something I liked. Being in law school, I realized that I didn't like a lot. A lot of the law jobs are research and writing. So you're alone all day.
Okay.
You know, writing memos, just researching case law. And I need to be around people. I'm very social. I need to be fast-paced, and the longer I was in law school, the industry or the part of law that seemed to jive most with that was something that was in a district attorney's office or a public defender's. But yeah, money was a factor. I didn't want to come out and make the same I was making before, because what was the point, you know?
Because was it hard to live paycheck to paycheck?
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. Yeah, it's not easy.
What was the worst part about it?
I would say the worst part is when you would go to pay for groceries and you would hold your breath because you weren't sure if your card was going to go, if you'd have enough to go through. And just for like a lot of, like paying drinks for somebody or going out to eat dinner with somebody, like kind of always having a plan B just in case it doesn't go through.
And does it taste, like, I would imagine if you went out to dinner, because I've had
someone... It just tastes like anxiety.
Yeah.
It doesn't taste good.
I was going to say, because when I started the business, I think I mentioned this in one of the other podcasts, was really tough financially to to buy a business and get the business going. And so the food just never tasted quite as good when I didn't know. Or I knew I couldn't pay for it and I was putting it on credit. So it just never really tasted as good to me.
Yeah. My approach was always to see, like, think about the portion size. Because if something's, like, $16 and I can eat it in one sitting, I would go for something that was, like, $22, but I knew I could only eat half and I could save the rest.
So it was like 11.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, well, these are two meals in one. I'm not going to eat all of it.
Rather than $16 expensive meal, 11 and 11.
Yeah, yeah.
Take that to go.
Exactly.
Oh, doggy bag, please.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it'd be like two meals in one. But, yeah, so looking at the job, the public sector usually isn't as appealing to some law students because you don't get as much as the private sector, like the big law firms. But for me, being a little bit older and having had worked really crazy hours, I didn't see...
Older, like, being early 30s.
Like early 30s.
Very beginning of your 30s.
Very beginning of my 30s. The start of my 30s. I didn't want to work 100 hours a week, even though it would probably be like a six-figure salary. It just didn't seem appealing to me.
Because you wanted some sort of balance.
Some sort of balance.
Because you already worked those long hours.
Already worked those long hours, and especially knowing that it was just going to be a very specific type that... I think I'd get really good at that one skill, but I probably wouldn't grow beyond that skill set. You're kind of like, I mean, I can't really speak to it, I haven't done it, but it seems much more like you're a cog in the machine.
Okay.
And we're not here to help you grow that much beyond exactly what we need from you.
Got it.
But we're going to pay you a lot of money. I didn't want that.
Okay.
So, like I said, the longer I was at law school, the more it seemed like something in a district attorney's would fit me in terms of my personality, what I was looking for. I found a position that paid, you know, not six figures, but something that I thought it was definitely more than what I made before. It would be enough where I could have an apartment and then start saving, because I would like to have a house someday, and I just want to have a job where it's like, well, at least I can start putting some money away a month and also pay for loans.
Okay, so you're looking for something where you had work-life balance, made more money than you did before because you don't want to live paycheck to paycheck. And that maybe gave you the flexibility to save for some. So what are your financial goals? Buy a house?
Yeah, I'd like to buy a house, I think, by... I'm 32 now. I think by, like, 38? Like, 6 years, I think, is, like, pretty...
I think you could probably do it sooner.
Oh, good. Okay, I thought you were going to say longer. I was like, no. I don't want to rent anymore.
You're 50.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think...
And let's just say, so you do not live in a city.
No, I live in the Hudson Valley.
Okay, so you're upstate.
Beautiful Hudson Valley. Yeah, upstate.
Give us a little quick ad for next week.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
The PCP ravaged Hudson Valley. Don't drink the water. So it's definitely cheaper in terms of cost of living. I can tell you how much my apartment is.
Yeah, so how much are you paying in rent?
So I have a one-bedroom apartment. It's 900 square feet. It's 1,200
a month. 900 square feet?
It's spacious.
It must be very different than when you were in the city.
Yeah.
Or LA, too, yeah. Right?
I had a studio in LA. It was teeny tiny. It's actually funny. I paid the same in LA as I do here, and my apartment's like 2.5 times the size.
Wow.
But yes, $1,200. And what was interesting is, you told me this. I don't know if you remember the name of the website, but when I was looking at the job, because, you know, you have like the base salary, but definitely with me, I didn't think about, like, oh, they take out money for this and this.
Oh,
and
yeah,
taxes.
The IRS is your partner. Taxes.
Yeah, so you were like, there's this website where we put everything in and it'll say what your take-home was.
Yes.
And that was
that
so helpful.
That is true.
Yeah.
Because there's a really big difference between gross, which is that really pretty number they give you on that offer letter that tells you how much you're going to make, and you're like, I'm rich. And then the reality is they take out money for...
Everything.
Taxes, healthcare... Hopefully, you put any money in your retirement plan,
yeah.
And then now you're a government employee, so they take money out for something else too, right? For your pension?
Pension,
maybe?
Yep, I do defer.
Do you have to do dues?
I don't know.
Maybe? Have you looked at it?
I'm not in a union.
Okay.
Yeah, not in a union.
But yeah, so it's always important when you get your offer letter to actually run the numbers and see what you're going to actually be putting in your bank account with your paycheck, because it's a very different number.
Very different, and it was helpful because that's when I was looking at apartments.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure. It was helpful to see, like, okay, so this is my take home. So what can I realistically afford in terms of rent?
Right. And how much are your student loans? Besides rent, what's your next biggest bill?
Student loans.
Okay. And how much? I was going to ask, how much is that?
They're about So one is $450 a month. The other one I think is going to be about $250 or $300 a month.
Okay.
And that's if I'm like very aggressive, which I want
to
be.
Okay. And then how long do you think it'll take you to pay them off?
I think if I keep up with that, I could probably have them paid off less than 10 years, if not
how
sooner.
How much do you owe?
About, now I owe about $30,000.
Okay, cause so you took out about $60,000 total?
Yeah.
How did you get from 60 to 30?
That single old rich aunt, she let me, she paid and then I'm paying her back with no interest.
Oh, so do you still owe 60?
She basically was like, pay off the ones with the loans.
And then
you can pay me back.
And then we'll talk to her.
Talk to her and we'll figure something out. So for now, I'm just focusing on the $30,000 with the interest ticking up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how many actual loans do you have? Because the trick with student loans is they give you one payment and you think that you have one payment for one loan, and typically you have to go in and look at it. And
oh, they are sneaky son of bitches. Great Lakes Borrower, I'm looking at you, you fuckhead. I don't know if I can curse in here. But yeah, so...
They're actually one of the worst.
Awful. Awful. Can I just vent for a second about this?
Yeah, go for it.
So at Great Lakes, I only have one there now, and one with another company. I can't think of the name. But Great Lakes...
Sally Mae?
No. Something
Nailnet?
It's not like a well-known one.
Okay.
I can't think
we
of
do
name.
A six-month follow-up, so you can.
Yeah, it hasn't kicked in yet. That's why I think I don't know.
That doesn't mean that you don't have to pay it. There could be interest growing on it.
Shut up! I don't want
to
hear it.
Okay, so the trick of student loans is they're not in this to be your friend. They are in this to make money.
Yeah.
And so we'll let you do your vent in a minute, but with the one that you just said that didn't kick in, that does not mean that that is not growing.
Mm-hmm.
That just means that they haven't asked you for money yet, and they're giving you the time to get them the money, which most likely means they're making money off of you while they're waiting. While you think they're being, like, so gracious, being like, oh.
Take 9 months off.
They're going to be charging you. That's not, like, a free period. Not always. I mean, some loans, if it's possible, it is, but I would say generally when it comes to private, it's probably not a free period of time, even they call it a grace period, like they could still be charging you interest.
See, that's what's misleading about the name grace period, because I always thought it was, we're not going to do anything because we're going to give you time to find a job, and then we'll start charging you. But
I
mean, that's misleading, right? Like, it's not crazy for a student to think, oh, grace period, like.
No, I agree with you. I think it should be called what it is, which is, you don't have a payment due, but we are charging you.
Yeah, we don't care. We are heartless. You're heartless and greedy.
Okay, so what happened with your student loans?
So with Great Lakes, it was three loans within that company, which when you log on, it's not completely obvious. So I went to pay off one loan, and they wouldn't let me, which is insane.
What? That's crazy.
I was like, I don't understand.
And this is the one your aunt was going to pay?
Yes.
Okay.
And I was like, I am prepared to pay this today. I have the card number, whatever it was. Are you ready? And they were like, oh, no, we can't take that. And I was like, what
are
you talking about? Yeah, I was like, I want to pay off this. What do you want? So basically what they said was, if you want to pay something above what your monthly due is, so mine was like $428.
Okay.
First you have to pay the $428, then you can pay off.
Were you late on payments?
No.
What?
No. That's just the rule. And they said it was...
And where does the... How is the 428 applied? It's applied to all three of your loans.
Yes. It's not applied to the one you want to pay off.
What?
Yeah.
And how much is applied to the 428 to the one you want to pay off? Do you have any control over
that? I don't think I do. No. And then what was weird is like they're like...
That is so strange.
It's very strange. And it doesn't make any sense. And when I asked, it was like a mandate by the Department of Education.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
For the record, I have no idea what the Department of Education's mandates are, but just going on basic banking rules, typically if you're paid up, you can just make a principal-only payment, which sounds like that's what you were trying to do.
That's exactly what I was trying to do.
You want to pay off the principal that you owed on a loan. Student loans are typically, and I say this with a grain of salt, but typically a protected class of debt. So because it's very difficult to discharge in bankruptcy, they have to normally or most likely allow you to pay off principal, which is the amount you originally borrowed. So you went in and said, my lovely aunt decided to give me money. I want to pay off one of these in whole. And they said,
no.
That's ridiculous.
That sounds too logical. We're not going to let you
We'd rather charge you 8% interest.
Yeah.
What company is this?
Great Lakes.
Terrible.
Fuck fuck you, Great Lakes.
I don't know if we're allowed to curse on this, but maybe you can go ahead and keep.
You're bad people. But what was so crazy, too, is so I was like, okay, so I'll pay off this random number amount.
And so you had to pay the $428.
Had to send a check for $428.
Okay.
Once that was applied, then I could pay off that specific loan that I wanted to pay. But here's the catch, too. The monthly, like, the clock for that monthly payment.
Oh, the cycle for your,
the cycle,
your
yes.
loan payment.
Thank
okay.
you. It starts on the 17th. Like, it would be too easy to start on the 1st or, like, the 31st,
yeah,
right? Like, that would be too easy.
Is it the 17th at, like, midnight?
Who knows? It made no sense. So it was like, if
Where
I...
Where did they come up with the 17th?
I think they're like, what's the most complicated random date we can think of in a month? I know the 17th.
I mean, it's my birthday. I like the number 17.
It is your birthday, but...
Okay,
yeah.
Random day.
What they said is, let's say hypothetically I had paid the $428 on the 17th, and then I went to call up the 18th and was like, okay, now I'm going to give you money to apply to this one loan. Because a new cycle would have started, I have to pay the $428 again.
Oh, so you have to pay like almost $900.
Yes. Before you can...
Then pay off a loan.
Yes.
When you have the money available.
Yes. And that's why they are pure evil. It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Now, you went to law school, so you have to be somewhat smart. Did this seem easy?
No. And the thing is, I had you explain it to me, and then I called them.
Well, this is more complicated than I thought it was going to be.
It was, yeah. I was on the phone with them for so long, and it's one of those things where it's not logical, so you think you're crazy, and you think you're misunderstanding
it. Kind of reminds me a little bit of dating.
Yes. Like, what is going on here? And that's what it felt like.
You ghosted? I don't understand.
I don't get it. I thought we were having a great Tinder conversation. You laughed at all my jokes, and now you're gone. But, you see, it wasn't making any sense. And every time, it's relatable, right? And every time I was on the phone for so long just because I had to have this guy keep explaining it to me over and over because I felt like something wasn't clicking in my mind. And I was like, I'm not a stupid person. This isn't making any sense. So I can't imagine... You know, I don't think I'm that smart, but it's like, I'm in my 30s, I had a job, I did well, I'm not an idiot. I can't imagine, like, a 22-year-old with no job experience. You know, like, they talk you into circles, and then you have no idea what's going
on. Yeah, I can't imagine calling up a student loan company where you're allowed to pay off a loan, because it's a student loan.
Yeah.
So it's protected. It's supposed to always allow for principal-only payments, and you're not... late. I could see if you're late, right? Like, you haven't paid them in 6 months. You're like, hey.
Yep.
You owe us a lot of interest. Before you pay it off, you need to get squared away here. But if you were paid up and you just called up and like, oh, I want to pay off a loan. And they're like, no, pay our regular payment. Yep. And that regular payment would be based on your actual payoff period, right?
Yeah. So this is what's crazy too. So once I paid off that loan, when I log into my Great Lakes borrower account, it says that I'm paid up until 2022.
So this is the biggest, and I've seen, you're not the first person I've seen this with, but I've seen it with other people. So what they do is, rather than adjust your payment down and say, okay, like now you only pay, because you've just paid off a chunk of money, now you're only going to pay, let's say, like $200-something a month, then you'll be paid up in 10 years. They just say you don't owe for 8 years,
yeah.
But we're going to accrue interest for those 8 years. And then when you start paying, you're going to pay $400-something for the next 10 following.
Yeah.
Or something ridiculous.
It's a racket. It's an absolute racket.
So when's your next payment due?
Like April 20th, 2022. like, what year is it? That's 4 years from now. But the thing is, when you log in, and it's like, next payment due, like $428.60 due April 20th. I can't even say it, 2022, and I was like, oh, great, and then, of course, my dad was like, no, idiot, like, they're doing that because for 4 years, you're going to have
accrued interest. And the trick with student loans that not a lot of people know, and hopefully we'll introduce someone else with them, but they do this thing called capitalization of interest. Did they tell you about that?
Is that where the interest is based on what has grown and not what the initial amount was?
Yes, it's similar. Okay. So what happens is, so let's say you borrow $10,000, mm-hmm. and then the interest is 6%, so it's accruing the 6% interest, and then you don't pay all 6% interest. So then they take the amount of interest that grew on it that you didn't pay and add it back to that $10,000 and then recalculate the 6% on the $10,000 plus the interest you didn't pay.
I don't get how any of this is legal. This is unbelievable.
Hey, you're a lawyer now.
Yeah.
You could help fix this.
Yeah, just me versus the Department of Education. No wigs. Hear that, Betsy? I'm coming for you. Betsy DeVos. Yeah, it's unbelievable. And like I said, I think as somebody who has financial planners in the family, I've had, you know, work experience, I feel like I'm somewhat mature. It is something that is so anxiety-inducing and so above and beyond what I can understand that I can't imagine for somebody who's straight out of school and has no help with this. It's no wonder, like...
Yeah, so this is something we should definitely look at because you don't agree with what your dad said. Like, you don't want to wait till 2022.
It'll be, like, triple the size. It
keeps growing. You have to think about it. It's just, like...
It's a monster.
It's a monster.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to sit down and look at you, but you should probably, since you already got your aunt to help you pay off a chunk of it, you could probably get the $25,000 paid off. I would say reasonably with your... what's your annual salary?
68,000.
Oh, okay. And your rent's 1,200, and then this loan is your biggest thing. So yeah, and I think what you could do is probably get it paid off in probably five or 6 years.
Yeah.
Get the whole thing squared away, and then you could use the rest of that money, or maybe you can get it done a little sooner, and then take what you were putting towards that, and that could go towards a down payment.
Oh yeah,
to save for a down payment.
Yeah.
Because especially where in the area you're in, you can probably get something, and you could do a first time home buyer. So I don't think you have to wait till you're 38.
Okay.
But we'll have to get you on a payment for the loans.
Okay. Yeah.
And maybe if you pay what you originally were supposed to and start not in 2018, not in 2022. Is that what you said? Or 2020?
No, 2022.
Oh, 2022. Yeah. Oh, okay. I got it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you start doing that now, maybe you split and put 100 or 200 towards the down payment money and then the rest goes towards the loan. But we could look at it and see what makes the most sense. Okay. Maybe you tackle the loans and like really go hard at it for 3 years. And then that gets you to 35, and then you save for 2 years for a down payment.
Yeah. I feel like I'm still so used to being on my law school budget that I think that's something that I could probably...
Well, if you're used to the budgeting, it's like the hardest thing, I think I've said this before, but it's the hardest thing is getting into the habit of a budget. It's like any other habit. It's like once you get into it, it's easy to stick with it, and forming the habit can be the tricky part.
Yeah. Like I bring lunch every day. I cook my own dinner.
Great.
I think my biggest indulgence is like 3 times a week I'll let myself get a coffee.
Out.
Yeah, like I'll pick one up for in the morning to bring to work. Because for some reason, whenever I make coffee, it just doesn't taste good.
That's impossible.
Gang, do you have that problem? It's never good. I have a drip thing. I don't get it. I do 2 tablespoons. It doesn't taste good. I do 3 tablespoons. It's just, I don't get it. So 3 times a week, I let myself
get coffee. Do you have free coffee at work?
No.
That's, really?
No, we don't, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, fair. Well, let's take a look at your budget. Figure out the student loans, because I definitely agree with you. It sounds like the provider you have is pure evil.
Evil. Evil. How can you... I don't get it. I won't get up on my soapbox.
Okay. Well, take a look at your student loan, see exactly how much you have remaining, what the interest rates are, and then the next goal you said for you is to want to save for a house.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I have some savings, but I think that's something that...
Well, you've gotten to the deferred comp at work.
Yeah, and then deferred comp at
work. And you already have... And how much... You already have the money saved in your former 401k from the music label.
Yeah, it's bigger now.
Do you know what it is?
I think it's somewhere around 85, 86.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's from your work experience for the first 10 years. Or it wasn't 10 years because you were
6 years. But then it grew.
While you were in law school. Yeah. And you converted it in law school. So even though you didn't put money into it, that was a really good strategy.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a good strategy.
It was a good strategy.
Thank you. You're welcome. Full credit for that.
I'll take full credit for that strategy. Okay. So then we just need to figure out how much to put in your deferred comp. So... Because you just started working how long ago? Not long.
About 2 weeks, yeah.
Okay, so we'll take a look at your benefits at work and make sure that you have, you're in all of those. We'll take a look at your student loans and we'll work towards saving for a house.
Yeah.
So you'll be one of the 6 month follow-up.
That'd be great.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for being a guest.
Natasha had a great time.
Natasha had a great, wonderful.
Yeah.
We'll hopefully tackle this pure evil loan company.
Oh, Great Lakes, die a slow death.
Nice. One of them has a lawsuit. One of them, I don't know if it's Great Lakes.
Is it Fannie Mae or Sally Mae?
It's not Fannie Mae. I can't remember. Maybe it is Great Lakes. One of them had a class action. No, I think it was Navient. Is that your other provider?
Mm-hmm.
One of them had a class action lawsuit, or maybe one was in the process or trying to put one together because they're just so predatory.
That's the perfect word. It's predatory.
Yeah, it's absolutely predatory.
Yeah.
They're not trying to help you.
No, they're not.
But anyway, so thank you for being. I know we could talk about how terrible student loans are.
Tune into our separate podcast
about how terrible student loans are. Well, thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And once again, this is a financial podcast, and you can check out our class, and we have a whole section on student loans and how to pay them and how to tackle them, which is exactly what I'm going to go through with you one on one. And that's at www.planential.com. So thank you for being with us. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.